This is Judith Leigh welcoming you to Manx Radio and to the podcast of this week's edition of At Your Service. Manx Radio. On this week's programme, I'm thinking about two sorts of silence. I'm also thinking about the poignancy of the D-Day commemoration last Thursday. So much bravery recalled, such great loss of life. And perhaps the greatest tragedy is that wars still rage. People fight and die. 80 years later, and still we do not have peace in the world.
Make me a channel of your peace.
Wallingford Parish Church Choir and the musical setting of the Prayer of St. Francis. Make me a channel of your peace. My special guest this morning is the Reverend Susan McIver, safeguarding officer in the Nottingham and Derby district of the Methodist Church, who was on the island recently to lead a safeguarding study day, which was open to churches of all denominations and explored silence, not as the theme for a popular song, but as something that can make people into powerless victims. At the end of the study day, I had a chance to chat with Susan, whose own life is a truly inspiring story, and certainly her family life had nothing to suggest that she would one day give her life to God as an ordained minister.
So I didn't grow up in the church, and my parents weren't British, and I found myself growing up on a council estate in Bolton in Greater Manchester. And that, I have to say, my childhood was just really chaotic. My dad was an alcoholic and he was a violent alcoholic, and we suffered the worst of that as children. And of course my mum was a victim of that as well, and she really struggled. She couldn't get herself out and she couldn't get us out of that as children. And as I grew older then, you know, I had all the struggles of being a teenager and everything else. And then at 16 years old, suddenly found myself really bad pain in my back. And I got admitted to hospital and they did some tests and they couldn't work out what it was. And then eventually they did a particular test in the hospital. It was called a myelogram, if anybody knows that. And as they did that, they found an abscess in my spine, but only because the dye hit the abscess and it paralysed me from the waist down. So that same day, they took me for emergency surgery. And I was really lucky because after the operation, I could move my legs, but I'd lost all control and all sensation from the waist down. So following that, I had to learn to walk again. And that was a huge, huge thing at 16 years old. And I look back now and think, that's the time I should have been enjoying my life. And actually, you know, I went on and had another 3 major spinal operations after that to sort out all the problems with my back as well. But you wouldn't know that now looking at me, would you?
You wouldn't. And I would guess that having all that surgery and already being from a disordered background, you didn't have perhaps as much support system there as you might have needed.
Yeah, I think emotionally, in lots of ways, I was quite on my own. But I'd started going to church as a teenager. It wasn't something my family did, but it was something I did. And then I got the support of the church.
For someone with Susan's non-church background, turning to the church for support at this truly dreadful time might seem a bit surprising. So how did that come about?
It's the brownies. It was the brownies who got me first involved in the church, and I used to sit in church parade. And the church that I went to is a really unusual Methodist building. It was a Byzantine-style building in Bolton with this great big dome on top. And I used to sit in church looking for God up there. And I think essentially I was very spiritual as a child, but no outlet at home for that. I'd look across and see the children in the Sunday school, and I always sensed they were lucky because they had Jesus as a friend. And I wanted to be part of that at 7 years old when I was going to Brownies. I wanted to be part of that. And that never went away for me. So the social side involved me probably in some senses initially. But then actually, what would speak to my experience that by the time I was 16, 17 and had been through all this horrendous experience, where else would speak to that experience apart from that love and care of that ordinary Christian people in that church? And I got the support of the minister and the church, and I had these huge questions in my head, and I would call that spiritual pain. And I had to find ways to try and explore those questions for myself. But sometimes I felt that the answers that I was getting were pat answers, and I think I was a bit like Job for a while. I was walking around with all these huge questions. Why is this happening? Why is this happening? I went to study theology, and I kind of asked some questions through that as we looked at theology and suffering and meaning that people make out of suffering as well. And that was part of the journey, that I was starting to put these building blocks really of faith alongside the going to church thing. There's a particular book, Nancy Iceland, she's called, and she talks about the disabled God and how the risen Christ is the wounded Christ. And it was about taking those wounds with you. I was able to begin to make some theological sense of this for myself as well. But actually to find energy, to find that I had worth and dignity, and all really through faith and through God saying, I am with you. This is a journey, I'm with you, and also I have a purpose for you in your life.
What did you do next?
I felt called to ministry at 16, actually, through this experience, but was then testing that call for myself. And so I went off to the Southport to be a lay worker there. And during those couple of years as being a lay worker, I then offered for ministry in the Methodist Church. I actually didn't feel I would be good enough for the church. I lacked a lot of self-confidence at that stage. I kind of felt called by God, but wasn't sure that the church would have me. And that was very much where I was at. And then it was only in those early years in ministry, because I came out of theological college in 97, around sort of late 90s, early 2000s, the Methodist Church started talking about safeguarding. And we used that word actually for it, rather than child protection, even in those early days. And I remember I was the children's secretary in the district that I was in at the time. And we had to pick up the safeguarding training. And it was really through that I was able to say to people, well, this is my experience. And so I then found myself helping the church through the years to respond to all of the safeguarding agenda, which has just grown phenomenally, really, through the years as well.
Safeguarding crosses all denominations, which brings me to the thing that you've been talking about with us here during this visit to the island. And we can perhaps best sum it up in the sound of silence.
And in the naked light I saw 10,000 people, maybe more. People talking without speaking, people hearing without listening.
And silence can be so many different things. It can be productive and good, but it can be very dangerous, can't it?
Yeah, it can.
No one did disturb the sound of silence.
So we've been thinking about power and how often behind silence there is power, because those of us who have a voice in organisations or in the church are not always necessarily aware of the power that we have and its impact on other people. We talked about abuse of power, which leads to harm, and that's an intentional thing, but there can be a kind of silencing of people that is unintentional. And that's sometimes when it's people like me as well, when we like the sound of our own voice and it doesn't give space to other people. It can be ourselves, that we silence ourselves. And I've certainly been in that position before, sitting there thinking, well, I don't know why they say this, or I don't know why they do it this way, but it doesn't feel right to me, but I'm not going to rock the boat. And actually, what I have learned through all of this is I've got an authentic voice to share here. And actually, we can all learn from this particular perspective that I bring, that's perhaps a bit unusual for the church. But actually, the church needs to hear this as well, because in the past, as the church, in many ways, many places, we've got it so wrong. And so actually finding and believing that God has called us here to this place at this particular time to make this particular contribution can be hugely liberating as well for the benefit of the church. So maybe sometimes we have to not silence ourselves and sit in silence, but actually be brave enough to share some of our experiences. And then alongside that, I think there's that bit of work for the churches where we need to be silent in order to give space to people to share their truth and share their stories, and that we listen, and especially listen without giving answers, and actually listen without trying to save and rescue everything, I think, as well, which we sometimes get quite wrong, I think, in churches.
Do you think sometimes we're afraid that in that silence we, as the listener, might hear something we don't want to hear?
I think that's very true. And I think sometimes we do hear things we don't want to hear, and sometimes we want to make it better. Sometimes we're actually in denial about that. If what you're hearing is about somebody you know or somebody you've respected or even somebody you love, it's incredibly hard to hear that those things are happening, and very, very challenging. So, yeah, I think it is really complex. We think listening's easy, but actually in this context, really, really complex. I've been around this work in the church for probably 25 years now, and at first there was just a huge rejection of having to do any training, huge rejection that this could happen in the church. Well, I think, you know, the Methodist Church and other churches have had their past cases reviews, and we've been criticised by external agencies in lots of places for the way that we failed to respond well to people. And a lot of that is about seeing how power is played out within the institutions we are as churches. And the different traditions have different power play within them that impact how that happens. But none of us, you know, all of our hands are dirty in this, actually. Everywhere we've seen this within these human institutions that are the church, and we're called to be better as God's people. So I think we are getting better, but we can't be complacent. We're not there yet. But out of this conference today, what was really interesting for me was, in the group work that I'd set, just the level of reflection, the depth of the reflection I heard from people in our discussions today. And that's really, really encouraging, because that's about the culture of our churches that's really important.
And the people that you were talking to today are church leaders, ministers of different denominations, and also a lot of lay people who are very involved in their particular churches. So if somebody is listening to you now who has had a painful experience, who's felt that they weren't listened to and has rejected God and the church as being a source of great pain, great hurt, would you say that this is the moment for them to think again and bring their questions and bring their pain back to somebody who can help them to perhaps see where God is in this for them?
It's a stage on the journey, and I think that person themselves knows whether it's right for them to speak out or not. I think if they did, they could go to the ecumenical safeguarding lead on the island. It's Tony Connell. If they went to any of the church leaders, then actually they should be able to find support through the denominations and through the other churches. I think there should be support for people in place. We are more familiar with hearing these stories now than we were 5 years ago, 10 years ago. So it is more encouraging, and you should get a better response. Hand on heart, whether you always will, I can't promise that. But I would hope that we are getting better as churches. And you know, if people are in pain, but, you know, we would want to journey alongside people. We can't take that pain away, but I hope that we can just journey alongside and listen carefully. It's survivors who teach us how to safeguard well, because it's only through hearing these experiences that we hear how abuse happens that we know and learn how to respond even better as churches. So in that sense, we do want to hear from you, because we need to know and we need to learn.
What you're doing is trying to improve our relationship with God. It's about getting the ultimate healing and whole relationship, isn't it?
That's absolutely right. And there's that bit in scripture, which is about not putting a stumbling block in front of children. And sometimes, actually, as churches, we've been that stumbling block. And I hope now that we're learning to be stepping stones, and stepping stones that are helpful for people and that can lead all people to that flourishing and life in all its fullness.
And the sign said the words of the prophets are written on the subway walls, tenement halls, whispering sounds of silence.
Thank you to my special guest, Reverend Susan McIver. And if you'd like to talk with our ecumenical safeguarding advisor here on the island about any of the issues that Susan has raised, he's Tony Connell, and he can be reached on 829 353, 829 353. In the mid-1980s, Reverend David Bush, a former vicar of Moraun with a great interest in Manx church buildings, presented a series of features on Manx Radio called Keystones. 40 years later, his work reminds us not merely of the history of a building, but of the people who, over many years, have put life into that church. So today, let's dip into the archives and listen to David Bush talking with Isabel Cottier as he visits Lonnon Old Church in Baldrine, dedicated to St Adamnan.
This, I believe, has got an old Manx name, being one of the keels. With me is Isabel Cottier. Isabel, what was the name that the church or the keel originally went under?
Keeln Trai, which is the church by the seashore or by the harbour, or Keeln Strand, which is also means a seashore, because the old main road from Douglas to Ramsey came by just across Groudle Bridge and just up here. So it wasn't, in those days of pack horses and people walking, it wasn't so lonely or distant as it may seem to people now who never walk anywhere. But in the early 1700s, it was decided to build a new church at the other side of the parish so that it would be more central. But there were a lot of complaints from people down here. The land wasn't suitable for building a church up there and all those sort of things. But eventually a church was built up there, which only lasted barely 100 years. But when Canon Quine came to be vicar of the parish in 1895, he thought this was such a wonderful place that he set about restoring it as much as he could, because after all it would be quite an expensive business to restore the whole church. But he was a man of enthusiasm, and farmers round about, Mr. Cleggs of Ballyveran, whose people have been in that farm for such a long time, and then there was Mr. Corkle from Ballymeanick, and even Mr. Gresty from the Liverpool Arms Hotel, they were all enthusiastic about this, and they set about making this part of the church. It was only sort of half of the church, but still it did keep the church going in all those years. And even now, there are people who walk round here just for the scenery and the quietness. It is perhaps a shrine now, it would be the right word. Mrs. Kizik, who's done so much work here, and she's got the enthusiasm to enroll neighbouring ladies to come and polish the pews and polish the brasses and all that. It's quite wonderful.
And you're part of the friends of the
I'm
old
a
London
friend,
church.
Yes. Yes.
This building, where we are again now, ceased to be the parish church in 1733. The Act of Tynwald, which allowed for the building of a new church, ordered the destruction of St. Adamnan's Church to be carried out. But due to the remoteness and the reluctance of the Manx church and the Manx people to disturb a holy place, it was kept. We've now come through the churchyard, past the magnificent Celtic cross. According to PMC Commode, this cross, a large wheel cross, is believed to date from the 5th century. Let's go inside the church and we read an open invitation. Friend, you enter this church not as a stranger, but as a guest of God. Here inside, it's a little gem. This little building is still greatly loved and used for worship, due, as we mentioned before, to the friends, particularly Westby and Phyllis Kissick, and all the work that they did. I'm reminded of the writing of Julian of Norwich about a small thing like a hazelnut. And she said, it continues because God made it, God loves it, and God looks after it. And so it is here in Old Lonnon, beautifully decorated, loved, and cherished. Originally, there was no opening on the north side of the church, because by tradition they say this is where the devil enters in, based perhaps on the fact that the Vikings used to come from the north, but that we don't know. But it was Canon Quine who opened up an old window on the north wall, and we're now standing in front of it. Can you tell us something about this, Isabel?
Well, it had apparently been closed, and when the builders were here to in the rebuilding of the church, they came across the sign that there had obviously been a window in this place. And so they told Canon Quine about it, and he was quite excited about it, particularly because this side of the window is much larger than this side. And his reason for this was that the light coming through this window would shine more clearly onto the altar, because that was obviously the focal point of the church, wasn't it? The light coming through onto the altar. And so he designed these three little pictures, if you like to call them, and the colours are really beautiful, aren't they, including the Viking ship, which he seems to be particularly fond of, because he has those at Lonnon Parish Church as well. He's got a Viking ship up there in some of his designs.
In the east wall of the church, we've got a much bigger window, which is dated 1897, with it underneath it a simple oak table given in memory of James and Esther Corkill. The Corkill family and the window, which was in memory of the Cleggs, are those two families still around here?
The Cleggs are. There's just down in that direction, but the Corkills are not in the possession of Ballymunick Farm nowadays. Mr. Corkill has died, of course.
And they were the parents of Phyllis.
Mrs. Kissick,
of Phyllis,
yes.
Kissick.
Yes, but the Cleggs are still here.
Well, to the left of the table is a beautiful illuminated inscription. What's the history of that?
Well, Miss Mona Douglas did it in a tribute to Canon Quine for restoring this ancient place.
The inscription is in three verses. Mm. And the last one says, "Yet did a priest bring it to life again," talking about the church, "restoring this old church with loving hands, bringing Christ's Eucharist once more to reign here, where it first conquered the coastwise lands."
It is so loved, is the only word nowadays, for this little church. It really is beautiful, and people come in the summertime. It can be quite charming here in the evening, you know.
We were here for Harvest Thanksgiving, and I took the service here a few months ago.
Yes.
The church was packed.
Yes.
Fruit and vegetables were all round the altar, and on the racks, there are two wrought iron racks, one on either side of the church. I presume that the locals put their top hats on there, did they?
Yes, I think so. Toppers or bowlers in those days.
And looking up onto the beams here, I see that we have several oil lamps, beautifully polished.
And the nice mellow colour from the lamps. The church is never closed, and apart from some naughty children writing in the visitors' books a couple of years ago, there's never been any harm done to flowers or ornaments or anything at all, so it's quite wonderful.
Well, as we go out now from the door, we find on there another notice on the outside of the entrance door, which finishes with these words: "May every stranger find within these walls a spiritual home."
Recorded some 40 years ago, Reverend David Bush was talking with Isabel Cottier in St Adamnan's, Lonnon Old Church, which is in Baldrine and is signposted off the Laxeter Douglas Coast Road and still has a very popular fortnightly Songs of Praise service throughout the summer on a Wednesday evening at 7:30, which is a really lovely way to experience the very special atmosphere of this country church with such a long history. And now, as usual, we'll finish off with a look at our notice board. And summer is definitely here, as the season of Wednesday evening concerts in St Thomas's Church restarts this Wednesday at 7:45. Onken Silver Band will bring you an hour of popular music, and there'll be refreshments afterwards. There's no admission charge, just a retiring collection if you wish to help church funds. And St Thomas's is just off the promenade near the Gaiety Theatre here in Douglas. And now some events next weekend. The Island Spirituality Network meets next Saturday, the 15th, in St John's Mill from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. and their mornings are open to people of all faiths and none. Next Saturday, the guest speaker is Reverend Dr. Janet Corlett, leader of the Methodist Church here on the island, and she'll be talking about hidden treasures, spirituality and Manx identity. Orisdale Chapel on the Kirkmichael Loop Road have an art exhibition next Saturday and Sunday, the 15th and 16th of June, open each day from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Admission is just £2.50, which includes refreshments. Proceeds are for chapel repairs, and there'll be a variety of art to purchase at reasonable prices. Sandygate Methodist Chapel are celebrating their 162nd chapel anniversary with a service in Sandygate Chapel next Sunday evening, the 16th of June at 6:30. And also at 6:30 next Sunday evening, the Mariners Choir will be in Laxey Methodist Church on Minorca Hill in Laxey, with supper and community hymn singing after the service and a warm welcome for friends old and new. And I'm afraid that's all that we have time for now. But I'll be back later in our virtual lounge, tonight from 9 o'clock onwards. Virtual comfortable chairs, hot drinks and snacks. Virtually everything you'll need to round off your day. But the easy listening music and your requests and dedications are very real. And I'd love you to join me if you can. So until whenever we meet again, this is Judith saying thank you for listening, and I wish you and those you love a blessed and peaceful week and a very good morning.
The Nation Station, Manx Radio.